The RPG After Years is part of the We Can Make This Work Probably Network. Find out more at probablywork.com.
Welcome back to the Golden Years. Welcome to the RPG Golden Years, your weekly show covering all things RPGs from the past, present and future. I am Bill, and with me today is my podcasting fiancé.
Just call me Betty Scott.
Yes, hello. I forgot about,
your own drop.
I forgot about David Bowie coming in to drop me at the end.
Hey, real quick, I was thinking, were you calling me your podcasting fiance up there? If we did get married and I took your name, I would be Scott Scott. So
you would be Scott Scott.
Sorry.
That's good. No, it's all right. I find it funny because at the very bottom of our document for the thing today, where it says scores, it says Bill Scott. It's just like, yeah, that's my name. Yep. So only I'm doing the review today. Anyway, this is episode 77, people. We're here today for a review episode, and we're going to be reviewing the PS2 NIS cult classic.
It's Disgaea, Hours of Darkness, and Grinding in the Darkness, something. That song in the credits? I don't remember that song.
You don't remember that song? Oh god,
that, when did it play?
I felt like that song was, I felt like I was playing all the time when I was playing the game.
Weird.
Yeah, that was Laharl's hymn. So yeah, that's kind of like your main character's theme, really. But yeah, I think we need a Patreon goal to make Rich play this game. It's like, it's just so anime.
I would wish that upon him. I'm not that mean.
Yeah, I'm a mean old git me. Anyway, since this is a review, we won't be doing any catch-up or anything like that. Today we'll be covering the development history, or what little there is, and the story of the game. We'll also cover the gameplay and our final rankings in part two, which is actually going to be in 2 weeks' time. But before that, just so we don't fall behind, here's a couple of quick show updates.
Yes, I did want to point out first that this game was hasted by Generic Fighter a long time ago, so we're finally fulfilling that wish. So your game has been played, GF. Anyway, the RPG Club. So this is our book club segment that we do every other week, with where we're all playing along the same parts of a specific RPG game. Sort of, it's a community thing. The current game for that is Secret of Mana, and the checkpoint is to complete the game. And that is due by Sunday, September 5th. So by the time this is out to the public, you'll only have a few days to get through that. So finish the game.
Yep, you've all got long, people. You've got a couple of days left.
I know, I did.
I'm almost there. I've almost finished the last segment, which I'm late for. Yeah, I'm currently in the Grand Palace. So, you know, I'll need to get out of the Grand Palace, go to the Pure Lake, do some more hours of grinding. I'm not going to grind. I've done no grinding in 6 years.
Assuming you don't have to do too much grinding, you should get through it pretty quickly.
Well, I haven't really done anything apart from the little trick with the girl and the sprite's granddad.
Yeah.
Which sounds really kinky. But yeah, you know, you can do that to just sort of spam off a bit of magic and get a few level ups with that. And I only did that with a cure spell. And so that's pretty much it. So
I did that a little bit, but then I think I lost that save somehow.
Oh, what? Man, a savage. But yes, so anyway, everyone, enjoy Secret of Mana. It's been a really fun experience for some of us.
It was okay.
But yeah, RPGs released in this last week. There's Baldo, which is coming out on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC August 27th. There's also Beyond Mankind, The Awakening, coming out for PC August 31st. Actually, there's a couple of games coming out August 31st here. I'm just going to go through them all. Monster Harvest, coming out for the PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC. Soul Nomad and The World Eaters, also coming out for PC. Prinny Presents NIS Classics Volume 1. I mean, what's the chances that came up in this episode?
What the hell? Yeah, what is that? Prinny Presents NIS. Okay, I'll look that up while you keep going.
Yeah, I believe it's a collection of NIS Disgaea games.
Oh.
Possibly, because there's so many spin-off games to this. It's a bit like this is like the closest thing to Final Fantasy we'll cover in a little while. But
yeah,
there's so many different spin-off games, and there are a couple of individual Prinny games as well. So maybe it's just a collection of those.
Huh.
But yeah, that's coming out on the Switch. Again, August 31st in North America, September 3rd in the EU, because we've got a bank holiday coming up, so no one will be working to publish it in the store on that day.
Okay.
Pathfinder, Wrath of the Righteous, coming out on PC September 2nd. Bravely Default 2 is coming to PC, people. Who would have thought it, eh?
That was only announced only a couple of days ago. Because I remember the article was like, it's coming to PC in like 4 days.
Yeah, it's so strange. It's coming out September 2nd. Because considering Squaresoft made the decision to not put the Pixel remasters on console, but they're now porting their console stuff to PC. It looks like Square are doing a big push to PC stuff now. Don't know why. Hmm. And then The Magister, coming out on Xbox One, Switch, PC on September 2nd.
Okay.
And on September 3rd for Xbox One. Screw you, Microsoft.
All right. Apparently, Prinny Presents NIS Classics is the game Phantom Brave, Thir Hermuda Triangle Remastered, and Soul Nomad and the World Eaters, which is also coming out individually, apparently. So, not really Disgaea games, but spin-offs, I guess.
Ah, yeah. Phantom Brave is a... I don't think it was ever... maybe they're making it an official prequel. What do you call it? Sequel to Disgaea 1, then. Because it was always considered a spiritual sequel to the game that we were reviewing.
Interesting. See, I had no idea that were like spin-offs. Interesting. Okay. And like you said, weird timing. Okay, so the RPGs that are coming out this coming week, we got Kataria Fables, coming to PS5, 4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, Switch, and PC on September 3rd. Encased is coming to the PC on September 7th. Actually, that is exiting early access that day. Crown Trick coming to PS4 and Xbox One on September 7th as well. We got the Final Fantasy IV Pixel Remaster coming to PC and mobile on September 8th. That's just... I saw a
it's
tweet.
Just like one at a time. Why?
Yeah. I saw a tweet from Square. It was like, your favorite line is back, and it was the "you spoony bard" line. It was like a screenshot of that.
And then, in the terrible font, or they fixed
the
font.
There was like a meme of like somebody with a magnifying glass. It's like, where? I don't see it because of the font. And then this is actually coming the day after, a week from today, but Tales of Arise is coming on September 10th to PS5, PS4, Xbox Series One, and PC. So I know a lot of people are excited about that. But are you? Have you ever played a Tales game, Bill?
Yes. So I'm a good chunk of the way through Tales of Vesperia, and I really like it.
Yeah.
That's currently what I call my enjoyment game. So it's just a game that I play, you know, kind of off podcast, just other stuff.
I feel
like
you've been playing for over a year.
Yeah, it takes forever. Well, before that, I was playing Final Fantasy X, so and that took me about 2 years to get through.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I'm currently trying to get through Tales of Vesperia. And then I think I've got Ni No Kuni, Wrath of the White Witch lined up afterwards.
Cool.
So, yeah, you know, I'll get
to play a Tales of game. I'm trying to, like, have at least some cursory knowledge about all the main series of RPGs that everybody talks about. So I need to, like, now I have a Mana game under my belt. So I need to, and I got a Disgaea one too, I guess, now. So anyway, that's it for the catch up. So let's get on to the main discussion, which is the review. That's our transition noise this episode, dude.
Dude, I love that.
So yeah, today we're covering the development and story, and so the game is called Disgaea: Hour of Darkness, which apparently in Japan it's called Makai Senki Dusugaya, which literally means Netherworld Battle Chronicle Disgaea. So does Disgaea actually mean anything, or
I don't know.
I've been wondering why is this called. They never say the word Disgaea in the game. So anyway, so this is the first game in the Disgaea game series. It was originally released in Japan on January 30th, 2003. We got it later that year in North America on August 27th, 2003, which, speaking of weird coincidences, 6,576 days ago, which is exactly 18 years ago. So happy American birthday, Disgaea.
Woohoo! If you come over to the UK, you're old enough to drink and smoke.
Congrats. I'd smoke, drink and smoke with the Prinnies.
I'm sure the Prinnies are drinking and smoking all the time. And yeah, in Europe, we weren't to get this to a little while later, till May 28th, 2004, which is exactly 6,300 days ago. So 17 years, 3 months, and 30 days. So not quite old enough to drink in the UK, but it can drive a car if it wants to.
Soon. Hey, nope. And this game's about being a bad guy, a demon, so you could like maybe do some underage drinking.
Yeah, well, Lahara is young for a demon, isn't he? You know?
Yeah.
He's only 1,500 years old, I believe.
Yeah. So on this show, as longtime listeners will know, we like to talk about what was the number one music and movie at the time of release of the game. So in the U.S., that song was one I'm sure many people will recognize. It's Crazy in Love by Beyoncé featuring Jay-Z. What do you think about this song, Bill? You know it, I'm assuming. Can you hear me? Ask what you thought about the song.
Yeah, this song's great. Who doesn't love Beyonce, and who doesn't love Crazy in Love?
I'm glad you think so.
I'm only joking.
I'm glad you think so after last week's or last episode's Christina Aguilera incident.
Christina Aguilera just never sat well with me, but Beyonce, bloody hell, she does some bangers.
Super talented for sure, and that's definitely a banger of a song as well. So, What about the UK?
Yeah, she's an amazing lady. In the UK now, we seem to have differing opinions here. I thought it was I Don't Want to Know, but you said it's FURB by Frankie.
Apparently it was like 5 days later that I Don't Want to Know got the thing, but yeah. So so FURB, which stands for Fuck You Right Back by Frankie. If you really didn't care, you wouldn't want to share.
What on earth is that?
She wants everybody to get fucked, apparently.
I've never heard that in my life.
I haven't either.
The other one, I Don't Want to Know, that's like a classic. I know that one.
Here, I'll play it just for you, since it was around the same time.
See, come on.
I'm trying to see if I recognize it or not.
You can feel this in your soul. This is a banger.
Starting to sound familiar, maybe. Somebody said they saw. No, maybe not. I don't recognize it.
No?
Let's skip ahead a little bit. You wanna know about it. Is there a chorus? Or is it just this the whole song? I don't wanna know. There we go. No, I don't know this one.
I don't mind.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Oh, well.
But I never heard the other song either. Of course, everybody's heard Beyonce. The UK always has weird picks. So.
Yeah, well, that one by Mario Winnis is featuring P. Diddy. Like, come on.
Puff.
But then it's also got Enya in there. So.
Yeah. That's
it's a weird mix.
Eclectic mix. As far as the box office in the US, it was Freddy versus Jason. Directed by Ronnie Yu, starring a smorgasbord of people, including Monica Keena, Kelly Rowland, Jason Ritter, Chris Marquette, Lachlan Monroe, and Robert Englund.
Now let's think about this property, Scott, right? Okay. Beyonce is currently storming the world with Crazy in Love, mm-hmm. and Kelly Rowland's featuring in a really shitty horror film called Freddy vs. Jason. Yeah, actually, she made the wrong decision to get into movies.
I feel like it was only a couple of years ago, maybe, that I saw this movie for the first time.
Is this the one where they're in space?
No, I think they're still at the camp, like the lake camp. And all I remember about it is I remember that Freddy and Jason were fighting, of course, and it was a very extended fight. So it's like, how are they not dead?
Half the film.
Yeah. But Corey said it was really good and made me watch it, and it was okay, I guess. My expectations weren't high, so.
Poor old Kelly Rowland. And who knows, maybe the other one from Destiny's Child was in here. No one ever knows her name.
Yeah.
Right. Her name must never be uttered. She's like Lord Voldemort.
That sounds about right.
She from Destiny, who must not be named. But yeah, over in the UK, we had The American Wedding, which was directed by Jesse Dillon and starring loads of famous people like Jason Biggs, Sean William Scott, legend, what a great name, and Eugene Levy, of course.
Oh.
The legendary Eugene Levy.
So they brought back all the main ones for that one, huh?
Yeah, well, pretty much every single one, they try and drag them all back out, at least for a cameo appearance.
Oh, okay.
There's even the one that kind of looks a bit like Keanu Reeves with a massive forehead, who's only famous for doing American Pie films, and he gets dragged out for a cameo in almost every single one. I don't know which one of these actors
I've seen the first one, of course, and I've seen Naked Mile. There might only be one more that I've seen outside of that. So
I think Naked Mile's the only one I haven't seen. But it's because they're just always on TV.
Yeah. I think Eugene Levy is still in Naked Mile, but otherwise I think it's a whole new cast. So
yeah, I think he has to be in it, otherwise it can't be called American Pie.
Yeah. And after Schitt's Creek, I'm a big Eugene Levy fan, actually. So,
I've still not seen Schitt's Creek.
It's pretty good. You need to watch it. But anyway.
Yeah, I've got to wait till my kids are grown up and I can watch TV again.
Let's get this review on with so we can go stick our dick in an apple pie later.
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, you want to start us off in the history?
Yes. So, Disgaea is originally a game created by Nippon Ichi Software. I hope I'm saying that right. I keep saying like Nippalon. Nippon Ichi Software, which is also abbreviated to NIS to make it easier for people like me to speak it. And it was founded back in 1994 in Gifu Prefecture, Japan, as an entertainment software company. Since then, Nippon Ichi Software Incorporated has grown into an international company focused on creating video game products across modern consoles and platforms. NIS America Incorporated, the United States based subsidiary of Nippon Ichi Software Incorporated of Japan. I love the way this is worded. established operations in December 24th, 2003. Now, if you're joining the company from America, what a bitch day to set up on. Like, it's Christmas Eve. That's make sure really we're ready for point. Work tomorrow.
Yeah, get your office set up.
It's like, fuck you, Nippon. and it's based in Santa Ana, California. NCIS America Incorporated handles operations, including localization, marketing, and publishing of the Nippon Ichi titles, as well as titles from other small development houses in Japan, most notably the Gust Corporation. NCIS America was the result NCIS. Of the company's wish.
Sounded like you said NCIS.
Yeah, there we go. I think I did say NCIS. I've been trying mentally not to say that. NIS America, NIS. I'm just going to say NIS now. NIS America was the Miss America.
We're all over the place.
Oh man, I'm going off pace now. Right. So Miss America, she wants world peace, was the result of the company's wish to focus on internal publication of their works in the US, given the increased popularity of their titles. Prior to the creation of this subsidiary, NIS software titles that appeared in the US were localized and distributed by outside publishers. Notable examples would be for Disgaea, Hour of Darkness, which was published in North America by Atlas and in Europe by Kyoei.
That's interesting. I've been Googling on the side here. You said that it was founded in Gifu Prefecture, Japan. And I was like, mm-hmm. What is a prefecture? Apparently, it is a district under the government of a prefect. It's also a prefect, could be a prefect's office or tenure, or the official residence or headquarters of a prefect. Does that make more sense to you than it does to me as an American?
Nope.
Okay.
And then I, was also I understand what a prefect is. A prefect is kind of like Harry Potter. Yeah, it's like a government. It's like a a representative, but not official.
Yeah. And then I was also wondering what other like famous series NIS is responsible for. I'm looking the Atelier series. What else we got here? We got Cave Story 3D, apparently, which Mugen Souls. What else? Oh, wait, they've published some Megami Tensei games. Oh, Etrian Odyssey. Okay. Some East games. Okay, they're responsible for a lot, more than I thought. Interesting.
Yeah, they're really good when it comes to, you know, like I said in there, especially for the NIS America side of things, for actually translating and publishing. They're a really good publishing house for that.
The Trails games. So, you know, you can Danganronpa.
Danganronpa. Yeah, so you can only imagine that, you know, when they released Disgaea out to the US and Europe, they probably weren't very happy with the publishing
that went on.
I'll get to that in a bit. There's some stuff that was added to the game that has since been dropped in all other releases. But yeah.
Yep. Disgaea 1 has also received lots of re-releases since its original release on the PlayStation 2. There's Afternoon of Darkness, which is the DS version, I think.
And then the Afternoon Darkness, because that's the one I played. That's the PSP version.
Oh, okay. So yeah, you didn't play the complete version?
No, I didn't. I'd already fired up the game on my PSP before that. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
Disgaea DS is literally just called Disgaea DS. And Disgaea 1 on the PC is just called Disgaea PC.
Gotcha. And then there's the complete version, which is on PC as well, and Switch, and probably a couple other things, which is the version that I played. Although I think most of the quote-unquote complete content is meant to be like post-game stuff, so I didn't see much of it at all.
Yeah, there's loads of stuff in there where they bought in characters from other series and things like that.
Yeah. Actually, I have a funny story about this game. So when I was going into college, I was about to enter into ROTC because I did ROTC my first year of college before I said, fuck that. But they bring in potential cadets that might be coming into that school, and they get hosted by like a freshman cadet that's already there. And so they were living in the dorms, and I stayed there in his dorm that night. But his roommate, who was not, he didn't know, he was just like whoever he got randomly placed with. When we went into his room one time, he was playing Disgaea on the PC, the PS2. And I was like watching it for a minute. And then later the cadet that was hosting me was basically like, ignore him. He's weird. He always plays these weird ass anime video games. And I'm like, oh, if only you knew. But and then here I am, like, 20 years later or whatever. Yeah.
Now I'm the weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Disgaea's North America release allows the player to select from either English or Japanese for the audio and the soundtrack. And there's a song which is called The Invasion from Within by Tsunami Bomb, which was licensed. Yeah, it's a great name for a band. It was licensed for the English audio track by Atlas due to its organ and opening fast pace. So it kind of, for they felt like it really tied in nicely with the game. And it's only played when the English language is selected. The option to select the language is not actually present in the European release of the game, which is mainly because the European release used lower capacity storage medium. So European PS2 games are on CD rather than DVD.
Haha, get fucked.
I don't care. It was only Disgaea.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even remember the vocal track. So that's how much it left an impression on me.
It's funny because actually, again, like I said, with the publishing of their games, like that was a decision made by Atlas, not by NIS. And so actually that song has also been dropped from all other versions of the game since then.
Oh, well, I guess that's why I didn't hear it then, or don't remember it. So Suhei Nikawa and Yoshitsuna Kobayashi, the game's producer and main programmer, respectively, have explained the intended humor of this guy. Okay, I'd like to hear this. Please do explain. They give the example of Captain Gordon being a satire of American comic book characters. Well, that was pretty obvious.
That's pretty obvious. Yeah, that's the most obvious thing ever.
Yeah. Episodes of the game are separated by previews, parodying such previews at the end of anime series episodes. Should we talk about that now, or should we save that for the story?
No, we can talk about it.
So at the end of each chapter, basically you get a little pre-dialogue from Etna explaining events in a comical way, like it's like next time on Disgaea, but from her perspective or whatever.
Yeah, normally bigging herself up and normally being not very related to what's actually going to happen next.
Yeah. What do you think
like,
about those?
Like her and Jennifer go shopping.
Yeah.
I actually really enjoyed them, as confusing as they were, like for the first three chapters. Once I realized, oh, this is just nonsense. It's just like, you can then sit back and enjoy them. And I did kind of like that.
Yeah. I won't say the game is
this game is very,
there are funny parts.
This game. Yeah. This game very, leans very heavily into a very Japanese type humor, I would say, you know, and all those sorts of tropes. But it's supposed to be satiring those tropes as well.
Yeah, it's just a lot of it comes across, I think, or our cultures comes across as pretty juvenile. So,
yeah, I was going to say, I think if I had been younger when I played this game, I would have probably enjoyed it a bit more. Yeah. the comedy of it, but it kind of goes over now, you know, mid-30s, not feeling it as much.
Right, and we'll get to some more of that in a little bit. The game is also filled with prennies, penguin-like creatures that explode when thrown. I didn't know that. I don't think I ever threw a prennie. So.
Didn't you? Oh, that's the best thing to do. Prennies, just get a bunch of low-level prennies and throw them at enemies.
I don't think I ever used a prennie after like the first couple of chapters. So, the game is more information on their origins is revealed as the game progresses. They contain human souls and labor in the Netherworld and Celestia to atone for their sins. The Netherworld being hell and Celestia being this world's version of heaven. Character designer Takehito Harada described the prennie design as becoming less realistic as development continued. So now I'm imagining like very realistic penguins creatures. And
yeah, I would like that.
Just throwing real penguins.
Yeah. Photoshop some penguins in there and start throwing them at enemies so they blow up. The makers, yeah, because they look like penguins, but they also look like they've been sewn together.
Yeah,
if that
like
makes sense.
Almost like a costume or something.
Yeah, but not in like a horrific type way. You know, I'm not talking about a man wearing another man's clothes.
Lore behind the prennies.
Yeah, it's not like House of a Thousand Faces or whatever it's called by Rob Zombie. It's not like that. It's a comic version of it. The makers of Disgaea responded that the characters represented by sort of 3D models in other games often limited by a set pattern of motions, and they were able to make the characters of Disgaea more expressive by using sprites.
About that.
Well, they kind of, because remember, this is like mid PS2, so everyone was leaning hard into the 3D, like polymetric character models and backgrounds and stuff. You've got things like Final Fantasy X, those sorts of games were coming out where, you know, most of the memory and everything that was going into the game was based on how good can we make this 3D environment? Whereas Disgaea just sort of went a step back and thought, let's make Final Fantasy Tactics look as good as it can possibly look.
Yeah.
And yeah, they kind of set out and they did that, you know?
I feel like the Disgaea sprites have like 5 or 6 emotive animations they can do, and then that's it, though.
Yeah, but then they've got all their attack animations and all those sort of things.
That's true.
I don't know. I feel like the sprite work was good in Disgaea.
Oh, and yeah,
there's a few things like,
I'm not arguing that.
I say I've got some complaints about this game, but definitely the look of it is not one of my complaints.
Yeah,
you know, it might not always be your style, but I liked it for the most part. Yeah, there was also, for some reason, they had two different styles of box art for the American release. So, yeah, you could have just randomly picked up one or the other.
That's weird.
So I think one of them had, like, the cast on it, and one of them was just Lahal.
So it wasn't, like, a special edition, or it's just, like, you can... It's kind of blind. You can pick one of the... That's really weird. Never heard...
Yep, you just turn up to GameStop and see which one they've got.
Yeah. In the PS2 category of IGN's The Best of 2003 Awards, Disgaea Hour of Darkness won... quote, best game no one played. Oh, congratulations.
I can feel that.
And won Runner's Choice and Runner-Up Awards for Best Strategy Game. Okay. I wonder what actually won. Hyper's Daniel Wilkes commends Disgaea Afternoon of Darkness for its, quote, brilliant strategy and being huge and funny. Okay, Daniel Wilkes, whatever.
Yeah, some I was going to say, this seems to be the thing. Like, Disgaea is a very sort of, it seems like an under-the-radar series thing. Like, it's not something I hear a lot of people talk about. Mm-hmm. But the people who do talk about it absolutely love it.
Yeah. And
whereas for you and I...
Yeah, and I think Disgaea 6, I mean, they're still making them. It just came out like a couple, 3 months ago or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, definitely come out earlier this year, Disgaea 6. And like, we had a few people in the Discord playing it, like Colin.
Oh, yeah.
Colin loves the Disgaea series. So I think it just depends on your sort of, you know, if you like the, if you really enjoy the grind and, you know, really trying to break games as much as you can when it comes, like breaking RPGs, you know what I mean? Really overpowering yourself.
Yeah.
Then Disgaea is going to be a fantastic experience for you.
This is one of those games where I'm more excited to talk about the gameplay than the story for once. So we'll get there
yeah,
two episodes from
definitely.
Now. But.
The game received a score of 8.5 slash 8 slash 7.5 from Electric Gaming Monthly. They must have reviewed it several times.
Maybe it was a few different people.
Maybe it was different versions. I imagine the 7.5 is going to be the DS version.
Okay.
and the magazine's Shane Befanferson.
Bettenhausen?
God, I can't even say the American-German sounding name. Said, there's an instant cult classic. Disgaea is so creative, challenging, and funny, ha ha ha, that it totally deserves the attention of the RPG gamers. However, he noted that it's rewarding gameplay and quirky humor beneath a coating of
antiquated
visual grime.
Interesting.
That's a weird thing to say.
Yeah.
There isn't much here that couldn't have been done on the PS1. Oh yeah, so he's just saying, like, you know,
that's true.
Graphically and stuff, it could have been done on the PS1, but they've done it on the PS2.
I feel a little iffy
and
added
loads
though,
of cool
because that I don't think they were trying to be like a graphical showcase. I don't know.
No, that's what the director said. He said he didn't want to be like a graphical powerhouse. He wanted to be a more classical style, but push it to its limits.
Yeah,
I think they did a good job of that. Yeah.
In the PS2 category of GameSpy's Game of the Year awards, it ranked 9 out of 10 and won Strategy Game of the Year. So does that mean that it came in 9th place or it was in 2nd place?
I've got no idea.
Being the first game set in the Disgaea universe, its success has launched a franchise that has seen 5 sequels, several spin-offs, and adaptations into other media, such as Mekai Senki Disgaea, Netherworld Battle Chronicle Disgaea, an anime adaptation of Disgaea Hour of Darkness. What? I didn't know this existed. That's weird.
Oh, yeah.
The anime is 12 episodes long. There is also manga volumes, and both manga and anime adapted the story differently. And I was also interested in this. Apparently, each Disgaea is more or less of like a direct sequel. Like Laharl and Etna and all them are still important in Disgaea 2, I thought.
I think you can fight Laharl as a boss in Disgaea 2, if I remember rightly. But I think they are kind of, you know, I want to say like interconnected, maybe like as in different dimensions.
Hmm. I remember reading mentioned... a subplot about how Etna like left Laharl's, what's that word they use? You're my vassal. She stopped being his vassal for a while and then came back in another game or something. I don't know. I could be getting that totally wrong.
Yeah, I think they kind of tie characters in occasionally for other games. But as far as direct sequels go, there is one for Disgaea 2, which is taking place 10 years after the end of the game, which is called Disgaea D2. And I think, yeah, A Brighter Darkness, which was released for the PlayStation 3 in 2013. And it stars the main cast as well as a few additional characters from Hours of Darkness.
Okay.
And then in 2004, the game received a spiritual sequel called Phantom Brave, which now, under the Pretty Bundle, could be an actual sequel. But who knows?
About to come out for everybody.
Yeah. Other than that, the only thing to say is that Metacritic gives this game a 84 out of 100. And that's about it, really, as far as development goes. It's kind of, there's not much to find out there on the internet. And believe me, I searched.
Yeah.
I searched a lot.
I don't know about you, but I don't plan on ever playing another Disgaea game. I feel like I've got that one under my belt. I know what it is. I know what to expect. I know when people are talking about Disgaea, I can follow the conversation. But
I think there's three or four in the master list, so there will be some more Discar in my future at some point.
You'll have fun
and I will be dreading
I'll,
it.
I'll look forward to that review.
All right then. So with the history laid out there, we're going to take a quick break before we move on to the story of Disgaea.
Hello, friends. This is Troidal Power, host of the Troidal Power Presents the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power, a podcast where I, your host, Troidal Power, play through games in a powerful way. And I'm inviting you to listen to Troidal Power Presents the Power Playthroughs podcast with Troidal Power, a podcast where I, your host, Troidal Power, play through games in a powerful way. You can find it and a lot of other weird shows at probablywork.com.
That's pretty ignorant, dude!
Oh, yes, and we are back. So let's go ahead and let's jump into this story, dude.
When I think back to the music I actually remember from this game, there's only like three or four tracks that I can remember offhand, and that's one of them. So,
yeah, I was listening to the OST earlier, and there's like three or four tracks which really stand out. But still, even some of the stuff that I didn't even particularly remember, I still thought, oh, this is really good.
I'm looking forward to listening to the soundtrack myself. I'll get there.
Yeah, yeah, it is a really good soundtrack. It was done by Tenpi Seto.
Oh.
He's a video game composer and a voice actor.
It's on unique style.
Yeah, well, it's very like I kind of feel like it really fits in nicely with the like visual aesthetics as well that's going on. But it kind of has this like weird, like almost like Russian, Arabian, Chinese twist to it.
It's just sounded like circus music most of the time to me going on in my head.
Yeah, a couple of it. But yeah, it kind of just had that real sort of that real feel to me, you know.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah,
story.
Let's not talk about story anymore. But yeah, that guy's really only famous for doing the Sky music. So not much to talk about there, unfortunately. So what happens in the Sky?
Simultaneously a lot and not a lot. So I don't know.
Yeah, I know. It's bonkers. So first of all, just a quick overview of the plot. And we'll have a little talk about some of the characters, and then we'll go into like the full story in depth. So you kind of got this king called King Krichevskoy. So again, like very Russian sounding name. I feel like they were really going with that type of effect. Yeah. Who? So I don't know what they're trying to say about Russia. He's the ruler of the Neverworld, and one day meets an untimely demise when he eats a bad pretzel.
I was going to say, wasn't it like some kind of ridiculous thing that he died from?
Yeah. So yeah. This is the humor we're dealing with here, people. He had a bad pretzel.
Doesn't it turn out later, though, that something else was the cause, or am I misremembering that?
Let's talk about that later.
Okay.
Fires. So, yeah, he comes to an untimely demise. Following his passing, countless demons who want to take the throne begin to rise up. And then his son, Prince Lahal, who's our main character, who was asleep during these events, wakes up 2 years later when Etna, who is one of his father's vassals.
It basically just means like servant or minion or...
Yeah, make of that what you will. she passes on the news of his late departed father and the uprising demons. Seemingly unfazed by the death of his father, Lahal sets out to claim the title of overlord for himself and defeat anyone who stands in his path.
Yep, because all these demons are rising up all around him, and he is technically the rightful ruler. He makes it his mission, and that covers about the first half of the game is him trying to claim the throne legitimately, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, so what did you think of Lahal?
I actually kind of liked Lahal. for the most part.
Ah, I've got such an annoying squeaky voice.
Yeah, I liked his voice. I liked his laugh. And he's like, he's mean, and because he's like the demon overlord, so he thinks he has to be evil. And of course, that's kind of an overarching plot thread, is like, even demons can have love in their heart, which we'll get to. Yeah. And he sort of softens over the game, but as a protagonist, I kind of liked him because he really doesn't take shit from anybody.
He's very tough. And like I say, he's supposed to be young in this, but he is 15,000 years old.
Young for a demon.
But yeah, he's an enjoyable guy to follow around. Like, and his actual story arc is really well played out, I think. Yep. And then also we've got Etna, who is probably I'd say is the secondary main character, although she has such a huge role in the background of everything that's going on.
Yeah.
So she's basically, she was the King Kochevskoy's vassal, and she's one of the few who stayed behind after his death. So she's then become Lahar's vassal. And she's got a Prinny squad that she's hired to kill people with, don't know why. she's really cool. I like it. Now she's very sassy.
Yeah, I agree.
And also she plays very hard on the whole also I'm a demon, we are kind of bad type thing.
Yeah, and she keeps despite the fact we never do bad stuff most of the time. The only thing is, I guess it makes sense because it's a demon, and this is just an overall complaint about the game. There's a lot of, they sexualize the women in these games, or this game, a lot. Like, it's even a plot point that Laharl is weak against big-chested women. So.
Yes. And Etna and Flon, who's an angel trainee, who joins the gang as well. So she hails from Celestia. There's a joke in it as well about them being flat-chested.
Two or three times, I think.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, that's why they don't have the effect on him that beautiful big-breasted women have. And it's just like, oh, yeah, you can tell this is an early 2000s game. Like, that's just not going to fly these days.
I mean, that made me wonder, were they trying to imply that Laharl is, like, just a womanizer? Or were they trying to say he's gay? Or I wasn't sure what that meant.
I think womanizer, to be honest with you. But yeah, so Flon, she's she comes from Celestia. She's been sent on a mission by Seraph Lamington to assassinate King Kochevskoy, but he actually sends her out to assassinate him after he's already known to be dead, which is a bit really strange.
So Seraph Lamington is basically God in this version of things, more or less.
Yes. Yeah, there's kind of no higher up that we meet in Celestia.
Yeah. And I will
now
say,
I put Vias.
I was just going to say that the scenes where Flon is trying to assassinate Laharl, that those scenes were pretty funny to me. I will admit that. Just the worst assassin ever.
Yeah, she's terrible. She's just too nice. Now, I've plonked Vias in here because he pops up again and again and again. He's basically a demon trying to take the throne from Laharl. So he's like a recurring boss character. And he refers to himself as the Dark Adonis. But when we first meet him, Laharl calls him mid-boss. Which I did kind of find that funny as well, and that sticks to him for the rest of the game.
Say,
so all the characters keep calling him mid boss.
Even his name display is changed to mid boss in like the text and in battle when you target him. His name is mid boss. I am the Dark Adonis.
I can count to three.
Yeah, he has like a very Transylvanian accent. But yeah, he pops up again and again. And then later in the game, probably the second half, you get a few more characters. Captain Gordon, Defender of Earth. His assistant Jennifer and their robot Thursday. They're part of like this group called the Earth Defense Team. Yeah, so in the second half of the game, there becomes this subplot where Earth is trying to invade the Netherworld. So they come into the picture. There's a bunch of subplots with them, which Jennifer and Thursday were okay, but I really couldn't stand Gordon. I know he was supposed to be like sort of an insufferable character, but it's just I think it's his voice acting. It's so ridiculous.
Well, he's supposed to be an insufferable American, so I'm kind of used to it, you know.
Fuck you. I'm going to play that fuck you right back song real quick.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I like Jennifer had a really good little character arc. Thursday was a robot. so I didn't have too much of an arc. But then you also meet Curtis as well,
who is like a villain for a little bit. He's supposed to be like the counterpart to Gordon, but things happen, which we'll get to. And yeah. And then, of course, there's the Prinnies, which we already referred to, which are basically like your basic ass minion of the Netherworld. And there's some lore surrounding them. Basically, I think it's like people that send in their human life get sent to hell to redeem themselves as Prinnies, and they eventually ascend to get another chance, reincarnation.
Yeah, it's the reason why I put it in here is just because there's not much. Didn't have many mentions of Prinnies at all in this review. And so I thought I have to put it in here just so that we can talk about it, because they are essentially, like you say, they've done something bad in their life. So their souls have gone to what is essentially hell in the Netherworld, where they're just slaves to demons, and they have to do whatever the demons do. And then, every now and then there's like this release party where the Prinnies who have worked hard enough then get their souls released to then be reincarnated.
It's a Prinny calling you right now.
It is indeed.
And there's a plot point around the Prinny reincarnation that's actually pretty well done, I thought. So we'll get there shortly. But yeah, that's basically the setup. You got Laharl, Etna, and Etna in hell working to secure the throne.
Cool. So let's open this up. So the story of the sky opens with Laharl rising out of his open coffin in his room. And then Etna, who we've just talked about, the one the castle's vassal, is standing in the room next to him. She's surrounded by various weapons, which she explains she's been using to try and wake him from his sleep for the last 2 years. And there's like huge maces, there's big cannons, Gatling guns. There's just all sorts of stuff just lying around this room that she's been trying her hardest to wake up Laharl with. He's just slept through the whole thing. He's pretty hardcore. She explains that he's been sleeping for that long, and his father, King Kercheskoy, has died. So Laharl then goes, okay, I better reclaim my throne. And after consulting with Etna and his other vassals, he goes to Vaya's castle.
Because this is like the first one that they've heard Vaya, is like planning to strike against him, right? Vaya's.
Yeah, they've heard that Vaya's plans to strike, so they go, well, okay, let's take out the first guy that we know of. So after we defeat Vaya's,
first here you do a couple battles and then you have to grind for a long time if you're me. So I didn't get very far into the story.
Same here. I got all the way up to Vaya's and then died twice. So I got a bad ending. There is an ending if you lose to Vaya's.
Oh yeah.
Where he becomes the overlord, and that's the end of the game. It's just this game already straight away wants you to go down the grinding hole just to get past the first stage. Yep. But we'll cover that when we get to gameplay mainly. Yep. I think almost after every chapter I could say, then I had to stop and grind.
Felt like it.
After defeating Vaya's, the Dark Adonis mid-boss, Laharl meets an angel trainee called Flon. Flon has been sent to the Netherworld by Seraph Lamington, the ruler of Celestia, which is basically heaven, as we said. And she's got the job to assassinate King Kruchevskoy, who is already dead. So shocked
again,
by Laharl's...
This whole sequence is very hilarious because she's like not, she's terrible at this whole assassin thing. She gets caught like 4 times and she just tells Laharl, like, oh, I've been sent here to kill you. She's like, oops, didn't mean to say that.
I've been sent here to kill the overlord. I'm the overlord. She's like, no, you're not. Where's King Kruchevskoy? She's like, he's dead. Who was my father? She's like, what? And then she's like really shocked by his lack of grief over his father's death. She's like, this is supposed to be this like really peppy, eternally optimistic character. She decides, very much so. She decides to join up with Laharl to determine if demons are actually capable of feeling love.
Oh.
So she observes him in secret. Observing everyone in secret during this time is the paranoid Archangel Volcanus, which is an amazing name.
He's basically the main villain of the game. But
his name is Volcanus.
It is a cool name.
So Volcano and Anus. He's basically being called a fiery arsehole.
Seems about right.
That's what I got from this. This is one of the few bits of comedy that I picked up on. It's like, oh, Volcanus.
His design is weird though. It's just like a middle-aged bald man with angel wings. So
yeah, but all middle-aged bald men are evil.
That's true.
This is a well-known fact. My best friend's bald and middle-aged, and he's entirely evil.
Okay.
Yeah. Completely.
That's my experience too.
Sorry, Dan, but you are. You're an evil bastard. he starts to interpret Flon's actions as treason and is convinced that she's starting to plot against him.
I don't think Flon would know how to plot against somebody. So, so eventually, after, you know, they defeat Midboss and Flon joins them, Etna demands that Laharl pay the salary of the printies that she's hired. And I remember this was like, Laharl's like, wait, they're your vassals. Shouldn't you pay them? And she's like, no, or something like that. So they decide to attack the demon with the most money in the vicinity. And this is Hogmiser at Denaro Palace. He's basically like a big pig demon with a royal crown and cape and all that shit. So they go to defeat Hogmiser, and Laharl's going to like kill the killing blow. And then Hogmiser's son rushes out and gets in the way. And it's like this little cute piggy or piglet looking creature. So Flon convinces Laharl to spare them, and Laharl lets them keep some of the money. And then in response to this act, Hogmiser joins the party. This happens a few different times with the various villains in the game. When you defeat them, they join you.
Yeah, they become cannon fodder in your inventory.
Yep. And I used Hogmiser. I didn't use him in like the last few chapters, but I did use him up until then.
Yeah, I used him a fair bit in some of the battles after this because he was kind of handy.
I kept waiting for Midboss to join the party, but for plot reasons, it makes sense later. He doesn't. So.
Yeah, he also there because you get a choice whether to kill him or not, and if you choose to kill Hogmeister, Flon will actually turn around and kill Laharl.
Oh, really? Is that an alternate ending?
Yep, that's another alternate ending.
See, I didn't look into the alternate endings at all. I only got one where late in the game, Midboss beat me. So I probably saw the same one you did, if I had to guess. So this is the game is chapter based, and we're like in chapter 4 or 5 now.
Chapter 3, actually.
Oh, really? Jesus.
Yeah.
So at one point, Flon and Etna discover a photograph of Laharl in an embarrassing situation, and apparently a paparazzi photo. But we never actually get to learn the contents of this photo. You got any theories, Bill?
I assume he was masturbating into a toilet filled with hamburgers.
Okay, that's a take.
So that's the humor of this game. I'm just trying to keep with it.
Yeah, there's a threat on the back of the photograph that states that that copies of it would be distributed if Laharl did not accept a challenge to fight for the overlordship. So there's like a blackmail situation going on. You would think that Laharl would just be like, or the person that's blackmailing him would just be like, make me the overlord or step down and not be like, we had to fight. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the demon rules 101. You got to fight each other to win.
Yep.
to become the next king, you've got to kill the old one. I think that's the kind of the rule that they've got here. So responding to this challenge, Laharl goes and meets Medeiros, who's a vampire. He was banished back in the day by King Karchevsky for stealing the king's favorite snack, which was black pretzels, which, you know, eventually he choked on.
It's a crime.
I know. Medeiros takes advantage of Lahal's two biggest weaknesses, optimism and women with sexy bodies. So, yeah, this is where it gets very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. Medeiros has been controlling Etna by holding her memories. So at some point he managed to steal her memories, and he's been slowly giving them back to her. Now, there's actually a bit of the game, Scott. Did you do it where you could go to Etna's secret hideout room?
Yeah, I did that every
chapter. And you have to go there after every chapter? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's kind of like a secret in the game where there's a switch behind the throne, a switch on the counter in the shop. If you press them both, then you can get access to Etna's secret room. And then after every chapter, she remembers a bit more of her history and her history with your dad, King Karchevsky. Mm-hmm. And she's got a lot of respect and love for him, basically.
She was jealous of the queen, and there was like a whole subplot where she was asked to kill Laharl but didn't. Wasn't Etna the one that actually poisoned him, though?
Yes, accidentally sent him to sleep for 2 years.
Right.
It was supposed to kill him, but actually didn't.
Yeah.
But even still, at this point here, she's still supposed to be working for Mandreas against Laharl.
Right.
So you pick up on
that all the time. There's like several scenes, even in the main story. It's like, Etna is like doing something behind the scenes here. Don't trust her.
So he had instructed her to kill the prince, but she had put him to sleep for 2 years by poisoning him instead. Etna eventually betrays Mendez, along with Laharl, Flon, and Midboss, they defeat him. So Midboss actually then comes and helps you at this point.
Yeah, and so, I did like this part where I think Aetna reveals that the whole thing was like a counter plot. Like she was a double agent mole. Like she was going against him the whole time or something.
Yeah. She was going along with him so that she could get to this point so that she could then betray him. So Lahal could defeat him.
Yeah.
Seems very convenient, Aetna. So waking up later at night, Flon discovers that several Prinnies are chanting and leaving the castle. Lahal, worried about his reputation being tarnished if he's discovered that he let his vassals escape, he chases after them the next morning. Eventually, he runs into death himself. And the player learns that the big Sis Prinny, who's just suddenly pops up at this moment.
She was in a couple scenes earlier in the game than this part.
Yeah, yeah. And she's like, she's strange because she's the only Prinny that never says, dude.
Yeah, I think Flon becomes suspicious of her at one point because of that. And she's like, I don't know what you mean, dude.
dude. Yeah, so we actually find out that she is actually Lahal's mother. And she became a Prinny because she gave her life to save Lahal.
Right, and that's why Lahal didn't die after the assassination attempt or whatever.
Yes.
And I actually thought that this part was probably one of the only effective moments when it comes to like actually feeling something or sadness in the game. I thought this part was well done. And Lahal softens up a little bit after this as well.
This is kind of like where the plot I was really enjoying at this point, and it was actually beginning to have like a bit of an emotional incoming, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. It was beginning to have like, I was beginning to feel the plot as it goes along. And I was like, this bit actually saddened me, the whole thing of his mother. She'd come back to look after him as a Prinny, you know, and then we had the whole thing with the Prinnies then being released because they've served their time, essentially. And does his mother get released?
Yeah, she does, doesn't she? She ascends, I think. But after this, like, it does a hard right turn into a whole nother thing.
into a whole nother bonkersness. This is about the halfway point of the game.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, are we already past the part where, I think it's in an earlier chapter, where you have to help that kid that Aetna introduces you to? There's a part where you have to fight like a zombie creature that's apparently been pieced together, and they make a joke about they gave it a horse's wiener or something like that.
That's a famous like meme from this game about the horse wiener. This kid apparently looks after zombies, and his favorite zombie, which he made himself using spare parts, including a horse wiener.
Yep.
Yeah, Lahal just complains about, oh my god, I can't kill this thing. It's got a massive horse wiener.
Horse wiener. Yeah. That's the type of humor. So, you know, Lahal's become the king of the overlord of the netherworld officially. There's no disputing it anymore. This is when we get introduced to a group of humans from Earth. This is the Earth Defense Force that we mentioned earlier. It's EDF. Captain Gordon, EDF, Defender of Earth. And then we got Jennifer, his assistant, who is like this girl with long blonde hair and scantily clad.
In a bikini.
I was like, why is his astronaut assistant in a bikini? I don't understand that. And then they have a robot, Thursday, which just makes like bleep bloop noises and whirs and noises all the time. But why is the robot named Thursday? I always thought that was weird.
I think that's supposed to be a reference to... I'm trying to remember what it's called. I think it might be Buck Rogers.
Maybe.
In the 24th century. It might be something like that. There was a program where there was a robot, I think named Wednesday or something.
Oh, that makes sense. Wednesday Adams.
What's that, Buck? It's something like that. There's quite a few pulls here. I mean, most of this Gordon stuff seems related to Flash Gordon to me.
Gotcha.
And I love Flash Gordon.
Okay.
Gordon's alive!
So they're apparently being sent to... They've been warned, apparently. The EDF has been warned that the demons are going to try to attack Earth. So they are like doing like a preemptive strike deal. So they send Gordon and Jennifer and Thursday over. And Gordon thinks his mission is to assassinate Lahal. And Lahal promises, basically, you chase them down. You meet up with Jennifer and Thursday first, and they eventually like join you. And then you go and fight. I don't know if you actually fight him or not, but you recruit Gordon. You do defeat him, I remember. And then Lahal like says he'll spare his life if Gordon becomes one of his vassals. And of course, this is very embarrassing for Gordon, but you know, he doesn't really have a choice here. When if I was Laharl, though, I would be like, you were too annoying to keep around. But Laharl really enjoys seeing him suffer, I guess. So it's revealed in like a cutaway to Earth that Gordon was actually sent to secure a path for the invasion of the Netherworld by the humans. And it's actually Volcanus that's controlling the humans. I think you get introduced to General Carter here, who's like in charge of the military. And then also Curtis, who's apparently Captain Gordon's rival. So General Carter sends Curtis to the Netherworld. And I think there's a whole part here where you go on a picnic and Captain Gordon's trying to escape. And then Vyre shows up and he stole the picnic basket, something like that.
And then there's the whole thing with Flon's pendant.
Oh yeah, you gotta
because
do,
it burns. I don't know if it is. It burns people if they've got a bad heart.
Right.
Like it's both. Like if you wear this pendant, like only angels are supposed to wear the pendant. So if you've got a good heart, it won't affect you. And Vyres picks it up and it like burns his hand. And then Lahal jumps into the lava, comes back out, and then gives it back to her. And she said, but it didn't hurt you. And he was just like, oh, ow, ow, my hand. It really burns.
I forgot about that. Yeah. You kind of.
There's so many little things like that in here. Like there's the whole thing with the three Power Rangers as well. Like,
oh, yeah.
There's too many little pointless subplots to put in here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I probably should have put in the one about the pendant because I think that comes into play later on.
During the ending. Yeah. So basically, we're skipping over a lot, like we were just saying, but Curtis comes and he kidnaps Jennifer. And we learn that apparently Jennifer is like the adopted daughter of General Carter. So you fight the EDF fleet and you are doing like a rescue attempt to save Jennifer. And it seems like maybe like, why would you care about these people you just met? But again, you do spend several subplots with these EDF characters. So you go to this giant spaceship battleship called the Gargantua. You get to the bridge. You defeat the army basically, and you have the general on the ropes. But then several angels, including Volcanus, appear, and they sort of help the military escape and all that. And you fight them. There's a whole part where they brainwash Jennifer to attack. So like General Carter is like a very, very bad dad. He's just using her.
Because it turns out the general's actually her adopted father.
Yeah, something like
that. He's not her real father, and she and she's basically like a prodigy. She's like the most intelligent person on Earth.
Mm-hmm. Which is funny because
she's got long blonde hair with her tits out.
She's just the assistant to the dumbest person on Earth potentially.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a part here where Thursday is going to lose all his memories because it's too damaged in battle, and then it gets them all back. And then there's a part where Captain Gordon tells Jennifer she's not his assistant anymore, and that's why she like feels okay with leaving in the first place. I don't know. It's like, God, I hate Captain Gordon.
He's an annoying dick. I'll say that.
Yep. So General Carter escapes, and at this point, Midboss appears and gives him a mysterious message, although I don't think that we actually learn what that is yet.
No. So in response to these events, Flon and the rest of the party decide to go to Celestia to confront the Seraph. Volcanus, in the meantime, keeps going to Seraph Lamington and declares that Flon is a traitor who is leading an army of demons on the invasion of Celestia. So he's really got his ducks in a row here, Volcanus. and he goes to lead a troop of angels to repel this so-called invasion. Volcanus then reveals to Lahal and his party that he intends to conquer all three worlds and rule over them as a god. What was his reasoning as well? It was terrible.
Oh, it was something.
It's just like no one can look after themselves, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, something like if he makes everything the same and controls everything, then nothing can go wrong and there won't be any wars or something like that.
Yeah, it was.
But you could tell he was just power hungry.
Yeah, absolutely power mad. And the Lahal's just like, all right, I'm going to dick on you.
Yeah.
So after defeating Volcanus, Lahal finally meets the Seraph. And Flon explains Volcanus' plan and what she has also learned while traveling with Lahal. The Seraph accepts her vision of events and agrees that demons are, in fact, capable of feeling love. However, he declares that Flon must be punished because she fought other angels and turns her into a flower.
Yeah, and Flon is like completely okay with this. But of course, Laharl is pissed out of his mind.
Yeah, Laharl really cares about her at this point. And so he attacks the Seraph, which initiates the game's final battle.
Yes. Did you have any problems with like these final areas or anything?
There was only the one where you had that like weird little maze to walk around.
Oh yeah, that took forever. Okay.
Yeah, that was terrible, that one, because you started off and you had this like little pathway. You had red squares, because we haven't talked about, you know, the geo symbols and how they have different effects on the battlefield and stuff, but essentially there's these squares you could walk over, so you had this path that you had to walk around first before you could get into the main battle area. But people can attack and cast magic over the barriers that you can't walk over. But because of your limited attack range, you can't really hit many of these people, so you're kind of trying to walk around this thing while you're just being absolutely pummeled to death. I hated that. That was just the worst level. But yeah, I didn't find it. Volcanus was easy, but Seraph was hard. This was a hard fight at the end.
I wouldn't have been able to do it if it hadn't been. It took me until these final couple battles, but I figured out how to use items. So luckily I was able to just keep Laharl healed while I...
Do you know what?
What?
That was it. It was that one with the maze thing where you had to walk around. Mm-hmm. That was the one where I was like, I'm sure I've got some healing items. And then I used a couple, and whatever I had was from like the beginning of the game. So it just did absolutely nothing. So I went to the shop, bought a ton of really good healing items, and then I managed to get into the area and pass that level. And then, I just made sure, I was like, well, I've got tons of money, so I just stocked up on healing items.
I did the same
for the Seraph fight. It was just like, oh my God, heal Laharl, heal Laharl, keep him alive.
It was Laharl attacking and Etna healing. And that was the only way I was able to get, because those were the two characters I spent a lot of grind time on. But yeah.
Yeah, same here.
Okay, so the game does have multiple endings, and it depends on the way you played the game. But the Seraph may or may not survive. And the thing, the Seraph isn't like an overtly evil character. So you don't really want him to die necessarily, depending on your own feelings. But Flon can either remain a flower or be restored to her original form, or she can even be transferred into a fallen angel, and then she becomes like a vassal to Laharl, so she gets to stay in hell with all of them.
I think that's the canon one.
Yeah, that's the one I got.
That's not the one I got.
Yeah, so it's based on like if you ever accidentally killed one of your own characters with friendly fire.
So is that what you did? Did you manage to not kill anyone?
I don't think I did.
I did it a couple of times. And it was right at the beginning of the game as well, when I was just like learning the mechanics of how the battles work. And it's just like, I didn't realize AoE attacks would also hit people on my team.
Right.
And so, a couple of times, I didn't think much of it.
The enemies like will even kill each other all the time, just trying to get to you. So.
Yeah. So I was just like, I didn't realize what I was doing at the time. You know, I killed off Etna a few times, killed off a few Prinnies, just like, okay, I've realized now this is a thing.
But I feel like if it wasn't for you being punished for it in this way, that would be a viable strategy, as depending on what's going on in battle sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Because you could just put a Prinny in front of you to block the enemy from attacking you, and then attack through the Prinny. And you just don't care about killing Prinnies, right? Because you just make more. So yeah, I hadn't realized that was a thing that I should be avoiding.
Yeah.
I had killed off quite a few of my characters during the course of the game.
I think so, I was just lucky, because it's not like I knew to go out and to not do that, but I think about halfway into the game, you told me or something. So I started avoiding it specifically.
So I end up with the ending, I think, where she remains as a flower and she never comes back.
Sad. She became a fallen angel for me.
I think my ending was Laharl sacrificed himself. I can't remember. Once I found out there was multiple endings, I watched them all on YouTube, and now I can't remember which one I got.
That can be a problem.
I know I didn't get the good ending. That's the one I didn't get.
Oh, but this is important. If you get the good ending, the spirit of Laharl's mother, I think her name's Stella, actually, appears.
Stella!
Appears before him, and Viers is there as well and appears to already know her. And so this implies that Viers is actually King Krzyzewskoj, which I thought was actually kind of a cool twist. I just wish it had been signaled slightly better, like hinted at. I knew that Viers was more important than the game was letting on, but I was like, at the same time, I can't figure out how he could be the king.
I'd kind of guessed it at this point.
Okay.
I don't know how, but I was always, before I got to like Celestia, and I think before the battleship Gargantua, I remember thinking, I reckon mid boss is going to be his dad.
So then
I just had this weird feeling that was what it was going to be.
But then why did he make this all happen? Like fake his death?
Because he hadn't been a great father. Because he's, so much is just flooding back into my head now. Lahal's mum wasn't a demon.
Right. Yeah.
She was a human.
A human. Yeah, you're right.
She was a human, I think. No, she was an angel? Oh, I don't know now. Fuck.
I feel like she was
I can't remember. Yeah, I think she was a human. So she married King Kochevskoy. Yeah, because I think this is all revealed through Etna's memories, isn't it?
And, she was like a witch that's or something, right?
Yeah, that's why Etna was jealous of her, because King Kochevskoy put all of his love into his mother.
Right.
And I think she might have even been responsible for her death in some way. But yeah, so it was kind of that whole thing of... Yeah, I just don't know.
I thought it was a cool twist. I don't know.
It was a cool twist.
I wanted a little bit more explanation other than, oh, does that mean he's the king? And then that's it for that. But
yeah, but I think it was just like, that was his way of teaching Lahal to, like, you know, because by the end of this, Lahal isn't the demon killing hungry machine he is at the beginning of the game. He has softened a little bit.
More like his father.
Yeah. The whole idea is that Lahal never admits that he's softened. He's always like, no, I'm a bad demon. I'm a badass. And he goes and kills something. but yeah, the whole thing is like, yeah, he's supposed to be a bit soft. And I think this was King Karchevsky's way in making Lahal a better ruler rather than just some bloodthirsty maniac.
Right.
That was kind of my take on it.
So you said there's a joke ending here?
Yeah, there's a joke ending which can be attained very early on in the game. if the final boss of the chapter defeats your characters in the battle, a cutscene will play showing Vyas himself being overlord. After the ending credits, like with all endings, the game will ask you to save your data, and the player will then start will be then sent to the main screen where you can reload your save data in a new game plus, which is also referred to as a new cycle. So again, that happens a couple of times in the game.
Yeah, I think that can happen anytime you fight mid boss, which happens 4 or 5 times at least, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And then, like I said earlier, there's the one with the Hogmeister as well. If you choose to kill him, then Flon kills you, and you can get a bad ending that way.
But I guess that's the whole story. So
yeah,
what do you think?
That's the most of it. I mean, yeah, I loved all the stuff with Big Sis Prinny. Like I said, finding out that she was Lahal's mother and all the sacrifices she's made, that was very heartfelt, and I really enjoyed that stuff in the game.
That part was suddenly good, but it was only like a 1-chapter plot arc kind of deal.
Yeah, but I kind of fit in nicely with everything else that's been going on.
Yeah,
and then they just suddenly throw Captain Gordon at you, and I liked Jennifer as a character, but I hated the three of them, and I hated the three of them being around. They were useful, you know, having more humans in my party to throw things around, which we'll get into next week in a couple of weeks in the gameplay. But at the same time, it was just like, I don't need this. This is too much. These guys aren't actually particularly relevant to the plot line.
Yeah, it really seems like it comes out of almost nowhere. At that point, it's like, I guess it was nice that Lahal accomplished his goal about halfway through the game, but then it felt like, okay, now we're going into season 2 of Disgaea.
Yeah, pretty much. And in the anime as well, they turn up in the first like 5 minutes of the first episode.
Oh, really?
So it very much introduces that whole mechanic of all of the characters together straight away in the anime. Whereas, yeah, in this, it just kind of felt like they were just thrown at you towards the end.
Yeah, it's different.
And like I say, with all the stuff, like all the little mini subplots and stuff, like there's the whole thing with Curtis.
Mm-hmm. Curtis, oh, we didn't even talk about how his plot arc ends.
Curtis, who's the rival to Captain Gordon, essentially, he dies, and then he comes back as a Prinny and joins your team to help you through, and then he makes a sacrifice of himself as a Prinny soul.
Yep.
In order to help you get up to Lord Volcanus, to Seraph, isn't it? Somewhere in there. But yeah, there's just so many little subplots. There's this weird thing with Power Rangers that I mentioned earlier. There's lots of stuff in this game that keeps every individual chapter interesting.
Oh, there's a part where you have to fight like the first defender of Earth's ghost or something.
Yeah, his ghost, and then he comes back, and it's just like, that's what I mean. There is a lot of stuff here with Captain Gordon, but I just didn't feel it as much as I did with the early stuff with Lahal, Etna, Flon, and then Lahal's mother.
And I think part of that is just how inseparable Captain Gordon really is as a character, in my opinion. It's just, it's he's really hard to like. And I mean, not only does he have that stupid voice, but he's like an asshole and obnoxious. He comes around a little bit. He gets his redemption or whatever. But
yeah. What did you think of the bad guys? So Volcanus and Seraph, Lamington, should I say?
Volcanus was, I didn't really like him just because he was just, it really did feel like just some dude decided he was going to be, or some old dude decided he was going to be king. just super paranoid. And Lamington, so at the end you learn that basically he and King Krzyzewski were working together the whole time to like ensure a brighter future for both Celestia and the underworld or whatever. But it's like that revelation comes so late. It's like I didn't really care about him, I guess, other than
yeah.
It's like you're just the final boss placeholder, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much, because he'd been there since the beginning of the game as well. But I was kind of thinking, I always thought it was going to twist and he was going to be a good guy. Mm-hmm. And then I thought Volcanus was going to be the big bad boss. But no, turns out.
I mean, Lamington
is the big bad boss.
Volcanus is the main villain, and he is the one that's like actually evil. But yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I did like Laharl and Etna as characters. Flan can be a little annoying. She's funny at points, but she can be. I agreed with Laharl half the time.
I think Flan was my favorite.
Really?
If I was to pick one. Yeah, I would say Flan was my favorite character, then Etna, then Laharl.
Why did you like Flan so much?
I don't know. I just kind of liked her. I thought, because I was like you at the beginning, I thought, oh, she's going to be so annoying being this like goody two-shoes character, because they're always the worst. They're always the worst in these type of games. But she really grew on me. I just really liked her. I liked her arc. And I feel like she's more the main character than Laharl.
Kind of.
The stuff that goes on with her, Celestia, is kind of her struggles, her trying to make Laharl feel more love than just demonizing her relationship with Etna as it grows from Etna just threatening to kill her at the beginning to them to actually being like almost like sisters by the end. It's just like, I felt like her arc and her character development worked brilliantly and worked well with developing Laharl and Etna. So I kind of felt like she was the linchpin there in the middle. So that's why I liked her the most.
So at the end of the day, would you say you liked the story or disliked?
I actually would say I liked the story. I feel like overall it was like, this is a PS2 game. Like unfortunately you've got to compare it to like Final Fantasy X, which has probably one of the greatest computer game stories ever.
Yeah.
but then also there's a lot of games I've played on the PS2 which don't have that type of story. Yeah. But overall I felt like it did a good job, especially as it was being very tropey and anime. It really put across its story well.
Yeah. I would say the story is decent myself. My main complaint about it is how some of it is told. Just like it's sometimes it's hard to tell what's going on that's actually important or not important. And then you've got this juvenile humor that's going on all the time. Some of it was funny, but a lot of it was like the opposite of funny to me, like groan inducing almost. But again, the story is not my main complaint about this game. And I guess I enjoyed it enough to where I would be interested in like going and reading synopsis of what happens with these characters in the other games. I know you said they're mostly cameos, but, or maybe reading what happens in D2 or whatever.
Yeah. I think D2 sounds interesting to me and whatever the spiritual one is, Phantom Brave. But as far as, yeah, I'm pretty sure they are just mostly cameos in the later games. I could be wrong, but again, I've not played any of them.
Do you think that the writing was specifically aimed at children or maybe young?
No, I kind of feel like this is young Japanese adults, shall we say.
Okay.
I feel like this is the thing. A lot of it's not going to translate well over, because, you know, there's huge differences between, say, the English sense of humor and the American sense of humor.
Right.
We know this because you don't laugh at anything. but no, and yeah, then there's, again, you get that same difference when it comes from Japan going over to other cultures. And there is a lot of humor in here, and I think a younger me might have got it a bit more, but then also there's a lot of sexism and I'm not really okay with that.
Yeah, I took a screenshot a few times on the Switch Well, I just like, I couldn't believe that was a line of dialogue. I can't remember any beyond the horse wiener right now. I was like, what?
Yeah, the horse wiener, the flat chested, the big chested women that made Lahal weak at the knees so he couldn't fight properly. And it actually reduced your stats for that battle as well.
Yeah.
It was like, it made him like a half strength for everything.
Which sucks because it's more likely that Laharl's your only character doing significant damage, depending on how you
exactly. But so yeah, it was kind of. But then that was also one of my favorite levels to grind on early on.
Yeah,
not for that scene. It was just like you could stack the character, you could stack the enemies on top of each other and then kill them.
Yeah,
get a lot of EXP from that. But yeah, other than that, I thought the story was very good. What about yourself?
I thought it was okay. I liked how some of the plots, I liked some of the subplots more than others. And I did like the overall, like, overarching plot with what the king and Lamington were trying to do and learning about Etna's non-betrayal, all that stuff. It's just that so much of it is focused on the EDF squad that I didn't care about. And then also just the writing in some parts was very questionable.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was okay. any other final thoughts about the story?
No, that's kind of it. I think probably EDF stuff doesn't work as well, because that's when you have to do most of your grinding.
Yeah, that's also true.
So longer wait points between plot.
They're so weak. But yeah, it's hard to like them because they're not useful in battle, really.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You have to really grind them up. I know Gordon was just completely useless. Mm. He's got a gun, like, and it does no damage.
Yep.
Get to the bench.
All right, well, let's head into our outro then, I guess.
Yes, so that's it for part one of Disgaea 1, the review. So, Scott, what are we going to be doing next week, mate?
You won't be here. It'll be me and Rich doing our normal news and catch-up and all that, and also the final RPG club for Secret of Mana. Woo. And then it'll be the week after that where Bill and I get back together to finish up this review. Someone had to go on holiday.
I know. I'm not working next Friday. I've got a strange working week next week. I'm only working 2 days.
Congrats. So look forward to that. And then, speaking of the RPG Club, one more reminder, the current game is Secret of Mana. The goal is to complete the game, and that's due by Sunday, September 2nd. So get your mana-ing on, everybody. Plugs.
Get your mana on. Yes. So, guys, please rate and review us on any podcatching app that you happen to have. I recently discovered, Scott, we're on Audible. So I gave us a five. Yeah, now neither did I. So I gave us a 5-star review on Audible the other day.
Great.
But yes, if you're using especially Apple podcast is the big boy here. So if you could leave us a review on that, that'd be great, because that really helps with the algorithms and getting the show discovered by more people. We also have a Patreon where we have early access to episodes, ad-free episodes, there's aftercasts and extra reviews, which we've got more than 20 extra reviews now exclusive on the Patreon. You get to get involved with the RPG Club by helping us nominate and pick the next game. So RPG Club is open to everyone to play, but only patrons get to help pick and choose the next game.
And that's coming up in just a couple weeks. So
yeah, that's coming up soon. So if you want to get in now to help us get a new different game coming up, I think we need a nice Halloween game, don't we? Given the months that are coming up. So you can find us at patreon.com/RPG Afteryears.
And I just wanted to throw in a note here. I know that we haven't been getting out the aftercasts as often as we should be, but Rich and I are planning on recording one this weekend about Final Fantasy What If. And so everybody knows that Marvel What If show that is just like proposing alternate scenarios of like how things could have been. We had the idea of like, what if there was like something Final Fantasy like that? So we did a tweet on Twitter and everything, and we got a bunch of submissions. So I think that's going to be a good aftercast to go to. So look forward to that. We stream all of our episodes live to Twitch. The timing varies right? when it's Bill and me, it's on Fridays at 10 a.m. When it's Rich and I, it's usually 9 a.m. Eastern at RPG After. Whoa. I got tongue-tied there. 9 a.m. Eastern time on Twitch, which is twitch.tv/RPGAfterYears. And I believe it's not like the Bill episodes are super common. It's just when we finish games, which how often does that happen?
Quite often now. You know?
We're getting there.
It's not going to be long to Alive Alive's done, then we have to do that.
That's true.
the current Golden Years game, if you want to play along with the Golden Years list, is Live Alive, which we are coming to the business end of that too. So if you want to play that, check out Live Alive and play along with us.
We also have a merch on my channel right after this.
Oh no, you've done Caveman, haven't you?
Yep, Mecha.
I haven't done Caveman yet. I've got to catch up. We have a merch store on Redbubble, redbubble.com/people/RPGAfterYears/explore.
Get you some good merch. If you want to reach out to the show,
we'll be wearing it.
Yeah, not today.
He's dripping in RPG merch.
At least I have the mug still, or the thermos. if you want to reach out to the show with business inquiries or idea episode suggestions, things like that, you can email us rpgafteryears@gmail.com.
And we have the hottest Discord in the Neverworld, which a link can be found in the show notes or on our pinned Twitter tweet.
Yep. I encourage it. And then if another way to reach out to us, you can find the show on Twitter at RPG Years. And you can find me at the Scott Spot.
And me at Metunica, Metunnica. Well, that's it, people. This was episode 77. Join us next week for more news and Secret of Mana goodness with Scott and Rich. And then you can join us in 2 weeks' time for the next part of this review. But until then, I've been the legendary host, Bill.
And I'm Pretty Scott, dude.
Pretty Squad, move out!
Dude.
Bye. Dude. That's ignorant, dude.